Good evening, you guys. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. And as we've done for 36 and a fraction years, let me think now, 1982? Yeah, 36 and a fraction years, 36 and a half years. We gather Sunday night, the curious radio amateurs, and teach each other what we've learned about wireless technology. It's primarily educational, a little bit of entertainment sneaks in. You'll be hearing some unusual discussions tonight on, for instance, the space report. Paul's going to be telling us about mysterious fast radio bursts, that they now know of about 60 of them, but all of a sudden two of them have been discovered. Extragalactic fast radio bursts, tremendous amounts of energy, and two of them are now repeating in location from where they come from. So we'll be hearing about that. Roy is going to be going through his list of puzzles and interesting science subjects that he's come across in the last couple of weeks. The TechNet is broken up into approximately three sections. Let me drop. The first section, people sign in because they do have a question or a comment for the net. And we take them in order and try to discuss their question or comment. Need not sign in because you're listening. After 36 years, we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proven anymore. And don't worry about your subject being too dumb, so to speak. Some of the TechNet subjects are pretty deep, and some of them are pretty light. And we don't have the snooty attitude that a dumb question doesn't come up to our level, and we're not going to answer it. From our point of view, a so-called dumb question represents a large difference between what the guy knows and what he would like to know, so he's most deserving of an answer. So we claim we're not that snooty. The accuracy of what you hear on the TechNet is not going to be perfect because nobody bats 1,000. The smartest engineer in the world has got a certain batting average. A certain amount of the things he says in all sincerity will occasionally have errors. And the TechNet has occasionally made errors. But because it's all recorded, you can go to the website of Mike, KC2NJI. He's got a very enthusiastic website by going to amateurradio.tangovictor. Amateurradio.tangovictor. You go there and you can find the last 11 years of TechNet recorded. Choose the right year, the right month, the right week, and you can play them back. And so, by way of that kind of peer review, people will occasionally review that on their lunch hour or while driving to work or whatever, and find our errors and bring it to our attention. We make corrections. That's the first website. And another website is LimeRockTechNet.com, which also has supporting a material for the website, for the TechNet. Let me drop. So the starting say, the first section, people sign in because they do have a question or a comment. And as a group, we discuss that question or comment. Hopefully we all become enlightened. Last week, for instance, somebody was asking the question about Baofeng and Waxon radios. We're probably going to be hearing about those tonight. Somebody I know is going to be giving us a report. There was also an unusual radio that somebody bought at a very good price from Asia, where he had trouble finding out how to program it. Somebody came forward with that information. So overall, it can be very helpful. The second section is where Roy, AC2GS, Dr. Roy gives us science talk. And so he collects interesting science subjects and puzzles. And he likes participation, so do chime in with him and give him your two cents worth on what you think are guesses to his question, his answers to his puzzles. The third section is where, let me drop, where Paul WS2N gives us the space report. So what's the latest with NASA and all the other space agencies? And we're going to be hearing tonight from Paul on fast radio bursts, a kind of radio astronomy at VHF frequencies that they believe is coming from billions of light years away, but tremendous amounts of energy for very brief radio bursts. People have speculated that really they might be black holes or neutron stars coming together. Maybe that makes the burst. But if that was true, how would you get a duplicate burst in the same direction? Things like that can't come together twice. Nora. It's a mystery. Is it extraterrestrial? Probably not. Each time somebody makes a guess along those lines, it turns out to be a more logical explanation. So at this time, I'm going to take check-in. So if you do have a question or a comment, please give me your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. Try to remember to wait for the beeps in between transmissions so we don't time out. When somebody gets called, they get excited and squeeze the mic immediately before the beeps, the space and time between the individual transmissions, and that can create a timeout. So, give me a call letters, your name, and the word yes right now if you do have a question or a comment for the net. K2RI will be listening.
A2RI.com.
KB2, Vivian.
Yes.
Okay, so far we've got Rich, N2EO, and KB2VDN. VDN, I should know. Please tell me your name.
Yes, you got a fee over here and a Far Rocco fee. Victor Bravo, November.
And Victor Bravo, November is your call letters. Please tell me your name. I'm not sure, but I think you said Freddy. Okay. We've got Rich and Freddy. Anyone else who wants to sign in with a question or a comment, please give me your call letters and name right now.
W-H-O-A-Y, Joe, yes. Very nice.
Very fine, Dutch.
Repeater, timeout.
Joe, three times during the last week you've called me on the phone. I recognized your voice, started walking toward the phone. You hung up before I got there, and I can't get back to you on the number that you call me on. So it's been a little bit frustrating. When I send you an email, it bounces. And when I try to call you, my phone call bounces. So when you do call me, hang in there a little bit longer so that I get a chance to pick up and talk to you at that time. Alrighty. As I said, we got Rich, Freddie, and Joe. Anyone else to sign in? Because you do have a question or a comment for the TechNet, give me your call letters and name right now.
Just one comment. If you tried to send something with my call letters, that email does not exist anymore. Is that the one you're talking about?
I used the most recent email you had sent to me, and when I sent back to you with those, with that address, it bounced. In fact, what I'd like you to do, so that I can get a hold of you, maybe I can get a hold of you by radio, I'm so darn forgetful, send me an email. By that, I'll find out a real address I can send things back to you, and list your favorite UHF repeater frequencies with their PLs, if you know what I mean. Over to you for a comment on that, Joe.
I don't have a favorite anymore, if that answers your question. I'll send you an email while you're answering the questions over here, because I can wait patiently for a while.
Yeah, by favorite, I really meant UHF frequencies I can go on where you might be listening, and I can therefore get a hold of you.
That's not hard to figure out. The alternate
repeater timeout. Repeater timeout. Cancel.
Yes. Yeah, you've probably given me some of that information before, but I'm so darn forgetful I forgot it. Stand by while I set and reset the machine. Okay, one last call. We've got Rich, Freddie, and Joe. Anyone else to sign in because you do have a question or a comment? Give me your call letters and name right now. K2LAW listening.
KDC2, Charlie 2 is here, Hotel Oscar, Los Alamos, yes, and if anyone checks in after me, put me last. Me the most time to chew on my views ahead.
line, John. KC2SHO, we got you, and we'll be picking you up later. Okay, the first person on the list was Rich, NQEO. Go right ahead, Rich, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, sir. Good evening, NQEO. I'll take remember a comment. I just bought a computer from Marco Center. The very nice computer, it's not the Plex 980 by Dell. It's a refurb. You wouldn't know it's a refurbish. It looks like brand new. I do have some problems with Marco Center. A number of their people, I told them I'm disabled. They would not want to ship it from the store. First I said they would, then they wouldn't, then they would, then they wouldn't. I really got disgusted. A person there, I don't remember his name, I wish I did, he said I was using my disability as a crutch. And I got very angry. The only one who saved the sale, a very nice person, he works there evenings in Westbury. All I know is his first name, which is Joe. There was also a gal named Patty, who stood up for my rights. But I think some of the people are very discriminatory against disabled people, particularly this one guy who said to me, I'm usually using crutch. Maybe he's had problems with other disabled people, and he has an axe to grind. I don't know. But that leaves a sour taste in my mind. I'm going to call tomorrow public relations. I'm trying to find out who this individual was. But the computer itself is fine. It's very good. They sent me a very nice Acer monitor, keyboard and mouse.
So repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Did you get that?
Yes, we did. Don't worry. We only dropped out for a second at the end, Rich. Go ahead.
All right. You know, we have a problem here, but all right. No problem. I'm really very angry at that person for what he said.
Yes, I already heard you had that trouble with Micro Center. But I guess you did find a way of working around it. Call at the right time, talk to the right person. And I guess you probably had to send a friend of yours to go and pick up the actual computer. Is that true, Rich?
Well, they did ship it. FedEx Ground. It was only because of Father Joe. He's a manager there. He intervened. He's a very nice person. He works evenings at Marco Center in Westbury. I recommend people talking to him if they have a problem. His name is Joe.
Okay, that sounds like good information to know, Rich. I thank you. The next person on the list was Freddie, KB2VBN. Is it Victor Bravo November or Victor David? I think it's Victor Bravo November. I hope you're still with us, Freddie. KB2VBN, K2RIW in the TechNet. One last call. Freddy, are you there? KB2VBN, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yes, this is KB2 VBN. I want to say, I was using a Mofast radio the other day. Just got it programmed for the last 2 months. I used it a few times. I'm just programmed into it. Got it programmed for me. All of a sudden, the radio started talking in Chinese. Everything that was programmed into my memory was totally gone. it was back to square one.
Yeah, it sounds like you are running into the problem of the Baofeng, Waxong, and the other Asian-made radios do have a programming procedure that is quite alien to what we're used to. So it, there was a person who made a cheat sheet. There are a couple of websites you can go to, YouTube videos and whatever, that will help you go through learning the procedure of how to program those radios from the front panel. It can be done, but it's a different learning experience from normal radios. So so yours was speaking to you in Chinese, and then it wiped itself out. I'm sorry to hear that. Were you able to restore it, Freddie? KB2VBN. Wait for the beeps. K2LIW.
Oh, that's
Freddie
couldn't restore it because I had somebody program the radio for me, a Coast Guard member. And, yeah, the radio is very sensitive. I think just the whole thing went blank. Everything in my memory was gone. I had all the frequencies programmed, everything was gone. And I tried to find it and pressing different buttons. And, it started talking in Chinese. For trying to program that radio with myself, it's like trying to learn algebra. Right now, I'm working on algebra right now to take a math test for my job. This is saying I'm old now, but I gotta figure out the math, the algebra formulas. I said it twice already.
Zulu, comment.
Bravo Zulu, go right ahead. I start with your name, I should tell you.
Dick, as I told you the other night, I just bought a Chinese radio about six days ago, and even though it's very quirky, the proof is in the signal, and I went from 5 watts to 25 watts for $79. I would have gone ICOM, Kenwood, Yaesu, if I had the money, and I think those companies have something to worry about, and I could give you more specifics now if you'd like about this radio.
Yes, go right ahead. Give us some more specifics. And once again, please start off with your name, because I'm Sudan for Defo. Bravo Zulu, K2LIW.
Bravo Zulu. It's going to sound like I don't like the radio, but I do like the radio, and it is difficult because you're completely right. There is, it's a whole different way of programming, and it could be really off-putting. The only hardware problem that I've found, and it's sort of a surreal type problem, is that you can't turn the knob. Let's say you want to go up in frequency or down in frequency and physically do it with the knob that's on the radio. You have to turn it at a certain rotation or it'll go haywire. It won't, it'll go, it may go down KC's or a couple of megahertz or go up. You have to turn it slowly. Watch out how it jumps. The other thing that's very weird, and maybe you could answer this, Dick, is that I have 10 repeaters now that I can hit, and Selden is the only repeater, and there's even another repeater in Selden I can hit, that I have to go into monitor mode to hear. In other words, I have to shut off squelch to hear this repeater. Would you know what that would be about if it doesn't happen on any other repeater?
Yeah, that is a tough one. I do know that each of these Asian-made inexpensive radios, Baofeng, Waxong, and others, the good news is they tune a very large group of frequencies. Bad news is that the front end is so wide open without a pre-selecting filter that any local strong signal can easily come roaring through, and there's almost no good setting of the of the squelch that will eliminate that. I think the only way people have gotten around that problem is to program the radio so that if the repeater you're listening to or the station you're listening to does have a PL tone in its output, you can program the radio so that it will only open the squelch when it sees that PL tone, and that can get around an awful lot of the problem of random signals coming through. Let's see if anyone else has a suggestion for what Rich just asked us. So I think it's W2 Bravo Zulu to take it with a little bit of delay. Anybody's going to give us any further information? K2RIW in the TechNet.
That's away, PG.
W2OYY. He's probably trying to listen on a single encode tone frequency, and the tone is split on the output of both repeaters. See if the tone and output tones of both repeaters do not match. That's why he has to go and monitor the repeater.
I heard that. I think RYY was in there too.
But that was RYY you just heard, so go right ahead there, Rich, with your comment on that, and then we'll go over to Dave next. Go ahead, Rich.
I couldn't make out what the other station was saying about the problem with the squelch on the Selden repeater only. Go ahead.
Joe, why don't you repeat what you just said and say it a little bit slower. W2RYY, K2RYW in the tech net.
Quietly or whatever, that would be nice. Both repeaters are using split tones. The input tone of 136.5 is used on both locations. The Glen Oaks and the output of Selden are different PL tones. They don't match. If you're on your Balfong or whatever it's called, with the same encode, decode tones for RF channel, you're not going to be able to hear the repeater. That's what I said.
Well, I don't have a PL tone for in programmed in for receiving on any of the repeaters. But let me just, Dick, I could quickly go through real quick the receiver specs on this.
Go right ahead, Rich. I'll wait for the beeps.
Just do wideband. Sensitivity is greater or less than 0.25 microvolts. Adjacent channel selectivity is greater than 70 dB. Intermod greater than 65 dB. Spurious rejection greater than 70 dB. Audio response, and I don't know how to read this, but 0.3 to 3 kilohertz. Hum and noise greater than 45 dB. Audio distortion greater or less than 5%. Audio output power 2 watts plus or minus 10%.
And tell us the model number and brand name of the specs you just read us there, Rich. Go ahead.
QYT. Queen Yankee Thomas. QYT. FT. Frank Thomas. 8900 D for Delta. That's the model number. And you have to separate the hardware from the software. The software, if I was a high school visual basic teacher and any kid handed me this software, they would fail. I could tell you what's problematic about the software.
And if I understand correctly, this is either a two-band or a three-band radio with, I think you said, 50 watts of output. And 70 some odd dollars buys the radio. Is that what you said to us earlier, Rich? Go ahead.
This particular radio is a two band, 2 and 440, 25 watts out on 2 and 20 out on 440.
You've owned that radio how long now, Rich? And it sounds to me like you're reasonably pleased with it.
Maybe you could tell me what my signal sounds like tonight. It's going into a PVC antenna with just a two rods, one going up, 19 and a quarter inches both, one pointing up and one pointing down, and it's stuck in the middle of a tree, and it's about 10 feet off the ground, maximum. I live in one of these condo communities where you put anything, even a extra little bush outside, you get a letter or a phone call. so the antenna is as non-optimal as possible. And maybe you can tell me what my signal report is, because I could barely make it into Selden before this.
Hey, you've got nothing to complain about with that signal. The audio is just the right level. Audio is reasonably high fidelity. RF is plenty. You're essentially quieting the repeater. So I've got no suggestions of anything you should change. I know we had Dave wanted to give us some comments also. N2APG. I bet you've owned a number of these inexpensive radios, Dave. I know you have. Quite a number of them. N2APG, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick and Rich, this is N2APG. With regards to Rich's problem with his squelch issue, I have a radio which is possibly the same exact model that he has or something that's very, very similar, and it also exhibits the same problem, okay? So I have no decode PL set up on my receive. So theoretically, I should hear anything and everything on that frequency. However, it does seem to work improperly. So when there's a signal on the frequency, I don't hear it. I have to unsquelch the radio using the monitor key, and then I can hear what's on the channel. So while the radios work pretty well and they do a lot of stuff, they're not perfect. They have idiosyncrasies, and that seems to be one of the idiosyncrasies. There is a problem, some of the radios, with the squelch issue, as Rich is describing. N2APG, back to net.
Bravo Zulu.
Echo, right ahead, Rich.
I think it was Dave. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name. But my problem is only with the Selden repeater. I have 9 other repeaters programmed into the radio, and that squelch problem is not there for the 9 others. Could you maybe think of why that would be?
Dave, I think you were telling us you also get that exact same effect on Selden. That implies that Selden has some other kind of a mysterious signal that this radio is finding. Into APG after the beeps, K2LAW.
I guess the comment I made before, somebody didn't catch it. The output tone of Selden is either 131.5, 127.3, or 141.3, with the input being 136.5. So if you try those as decode tones first, while somebody's talking, maybe you'll find the correct tone that Selden's outputting, and then reprogram your radio accordingly to have decode PL.
Yeah, I think Eric can clear this up for us. I believe both the Limock Glen Oaks repeater and the Selden repeater, I think they each have a different PL tone for input and output. But was it spoke that...
No. They have a different tone for the output, Dick. The input tone is still 136.5. The output tones are different.
Only Glen Oaks is the only one with a different output. All other repeaters are 136.5.
So, Eric, what could be mysterious? Both Dave and Rich get this peculiar characteristic where, unless they do some kind of thorough unkeying, they're getting a mysterious squelching phenomenon when they listen to the Selden repeater. So, could there be a mysterious signal in Selden that somehow this radio is picking up? KE2EJ, after the beeps, K2LAW.
Yes, Dick, my problem is not on Selden, so it's not the same exact issue. And to APG.
Thank you. You got it, Eric.
Yes, with Dave.
Would you like to repeat your last transmission, Eric?
I say, now we're talking about Chinese radios with very buggy software.
Okay, in the case of Rich's situation, what could be unique about the Selden repeater that makes his radio behave that way only on that particular repeater and no others? Over to you, Eric.
As I said, now I suspect that this is a Chinese-made radio, and they have been known to make software with bugs in it.
Okay, so we got buggy software. But what is that buggy software finding on only that particular repeater? Got a guess on that one, Eric?
Yeah, I would guess that their software has made a boo-boo. When it comes up with a certain combination of numbers, in this case 147.375, does something stupid. And I'm sure it does that on another frequency somewhere that you might not be aware of because you might not have a repeater on that frequency. So, and I've seen that happen before, so have other people. If it's a Chinese radio, you might check their website and see if there's a software update.
I've got a question for you, Rich. Of all the repeaters that you've programmed, which don't behave that way, but only Selden does, is Selden the only one that has the last digit of 5KC975375? I wonder if the common denominator is the 5KC offset. Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu, after the beeps, wait for the beeps, K2RIW.
See the signal in the S meter, if that's what you want to call it, but in an S meter, I can see the signals, but I can't hear anything to monitor the mode, only on Selden.
Okay.
The software is, I don't know, it's almost incomprehensible how buggy it is. For instance, you boot it. Let me just drop.
I2H.
Yeah, I just had another thought. And it could be in the code mode with the instead of PL. Go ahead,
Ready. I'm decoding Selden on 141.3. I think we had changed it way back when we had an Intermod problem. I can't decode on 136.5. I'm decoding on 141.3.
I can put that. Well, one thing good about the software, that is the only thing good about it, is that you could write to the radio within like 5 seconds. So I'm going to put that in. What it does, it automatically turns the radio off, then turns it back on after it's written. So give me, 30 seconds or whatever, and let me see if that fixes that problem.
Sounds like a good thing to try, Rich. Okay, while we're waiting, we're going to go over to John, KC2SHO, in Los Alamos, K2RAW. Go right ahead, John.
Well, that was quick. Let me walk up to my node, make sure I've got it captured. Yeah. I've enjoyed some of the science we've been getting into here, and obviously living here in Los Alamos, science is all around me, and enjoying the recent direction the TechNet has gone with that. I hope everybody else is as well. Let me drop it and catch my breath for 1 second. So recently I was introduced to a book called The Curve of Binding Energy by John McPhee, who is a nuclear scientist of some stature, and the book has a lot of interesting things about this area. But this book was written in 1973, and he gives a real account of the nuclear industry at the time. Of course, this is now, it was made 1 year before I was born, so this book is 46-ish years old. And but in the book, he says that it's a joke, actually, at the time, that it actually takes a lot more energy to produce the nuclear fuel, the uranium, the particular uranium that they need. It takes more energy to produce it than you can actually get out of it. I'm wondering if anyone knows, in the 46 years since this book is written, have we changed that? Have we actually turned it around so that producing the uranium used for nuclear fuel is actually not more costly than using the fuel to create electricity? This was a mind-blowing thing for me to read. As far as I know, it was true at the time. K2IW, KC2SHO, wondering if anyone has an answer.
Yeah, that's true. That's a little bit discouraging. Although, I guess the procedures by which you process the fuel to get ready for a nuclear reactor power station, I'd like to believe that is not pumping carbon dioxide and other climate-changing gases into the atmosphere, so as far as global warming is concerned, maybe it's still desirable. Right now, global warming is one of the main things we seem to be worrying about. So I wonder if anyone has any further information as to the modern-day nuclear power stations. Do we break even on the total power cycle? Everything you go through from refining the raw material out of the ground until you use it in the reactor, process it, and then you have to store it for a whole lot of years afterwards. If you include the safe storage and safe transportation, I suspect that nuclear is still going to be more expensive than other sources of power. That's my guess. See if anyone on frequency has anything further on this they want to say. Give me a call. That is a name right now. K2RIW in the tech hand.
N2EO. I don't know what happened, but do you know way back when President Eisenhower made the statement that nuclear energy would be so cheap you couldn't measure it?
In the very beginning, the scientists talking to Eisenhower, who were naive, thought it would be so inexpensive and so large in energy output that you wouldn't even bother putting a watt-hour meter at each individual house. Everybody would just pay a very small flat rate. Predictions along those lines were made. Well, we've gone through a whole lot of learning curves since then, and an awful lot of what we've known since then is significantly different. So I suspect the total fuel cycle from mining the ore, refining the ore, transporting the ore, using the ore, taking the used ore out of the reactor, storing it locally, then doing long-term storage later on, that total fuel cycle has to be awfully expensive. The good news is that hopefully it doesn't contribute a great deal to global warming and climate change as do fossil fuels, but still it's got a number of disadvantages, and I think the bottom line is it's not cheap. There must be some nuclear enthusiasts out there that can give us the other side of the coin. If so, please give us the call letters right now. K2IW in the TechNet.
I never knew anything there. I think ultimately solar energy, solar cars and solar energy on boats will be the ultimate that we can expect for now.
A number of the renewables look awfully desirable. Solar, voltaic, wind, tide, North American gyre of the Atlantic Ocean. If you could bury some large hydro propellers off the shore of Florida and take that Gulf Stream, which has a tremendous amount of energy flowing through there, if you could design machinery that wouldn't be fouled with seaweed and whatever, you could be getting an awful lot of free energy. You're literally using the fact that the sun is shining on thousands of square miles of ocean, which causes I can't even think of the name of the current, but you know what I mean now. North American current, or the North American gyre is called. There's all kinds of ways you can take energy the sun is supplying to us and suck it back out for our purposes. Not to make an investment, but maybe it's time we make that investment. I'd like to see the United States be energy independent and not dependent on foreign oil. Back to you after some delay, John. KC2SHO in Los Alamos. I'm guessing that it could still be true, even though here we are 40, 50 years later. K2RIW in the tech net.
Yes, thanks, Dick. And I have a few more words. On the subject itself, what many people may not know, uranium, I think, 233, I'm trying to recall from the book, but that is the isotope you want. It's the fissile material that gives you the reaction you want. There's very little of that in most of the ore we pull out. It's very difficult to separate from the 232. And you touched on the storage of afterwards. Yes, so there's the storage, but apparently quite a bit of it gets converted through another process into plutonium. And it's a great book if you want to learn about all of this and what it means. Again, you know, it's kind of old, but I think, you know, a lot of it is still pertinent, and it goes into some people who are very good names to know if it's a subject that that interests you. There's a Ted Taylor who worked here at Los Alamos. Real interesting guy to read about. And on the renewables, you know, storage is the issue. We hear a lot of promotion of renewables, but you can't just turn it on and off when you want, you know. We use most of our energy in the mornings before work and in the evenings when we get home. That period of the day when the sun will hopefully be shining the most if you don't have clouds and that type of thing, the brightest part of the day, is actually not our highest demand. So you can't just turn it on and off like you can with other power generation sources that you can throttle back or control in some way. So this is where the idea of batteries come in, but then we worry about, okay, well, batteries are a chemical thing, you know, it's an electronic item, but now we have the problem of if everybody's got batteries everywhere, building new ones, disposal of old ones, reclaiming, you know, the whole process and the concerns all come around a different way. If that makes sense. K2IW, KC2SHO. Hope that's clear.
KC2GS?
Roy recognized. You've got a good point there, John. Energy consumed in the process of building the batteries is significant. The batteries themselves have a certain number of kilowatt hours of energy storage, a certain number of joules can be stored in the battery, and storing large amounts of electrical power in batteries is quite difficult. Obvious by the fact that you can easily buy a petroleum-powered automobile that can drive 450 miles. I don't think anybody sells an electric vehicle that on a battery charge can go even half that distance. So energy density in batteries is a problem. And electrical power that we use in our homes is a very unique kind of thing. You have to produce the exact amount that's being consumed at that instant of time to make the whole system balance correctly. Excess power generation at that time when you're not using it, if you don't have a great way of storing it, represents a problem. AC2GS, K2RIW. Straighten us all out on this one, Roy.
Good evening, Dick. Good evening, everyone. Well, like they say on Facebook, it's complicated. Uranium-235 is the fissile material that reactors use. I don't know if it costs more to produce. It strikes me as counterintuitive. Germany, up until the nuclear scare, was manufacturing these generators. China is manufacturing these generators. So as long as you don't concentrate on where you get rid of the poison produced, it probably is cost effective for power production. I don't know the numbers, but that's my gut feeling. You know, there's also the complications of breeder reactors, and a lot of reactors were maintained purely to produce plutonium for bombs, and so you factor that price into it, and it's a lost leader, if you will. You know, they're working, well, I wish they were working on thorium more. China is working on thorium. India is working on thorium. We're not working on thorium. And eventually, in 20 years, and it's been in 20 years for the last 50 years, hopefully, fission technology.
You too, Bravo Zulu.
Turn them to Rio. Let's turn it over to Rich.
You got it, Rich.
I want to say problem solved with the squelch with 141.3. So I'm a happy camper, yes. Go ahead. And maybe next week, if you want, Dick, I can get into the software end of it, which might help somebody if they're struggling with it. W2BZ.
Maybe we'll have a little bit of time tonight, Rich, after let's see what Intuio's got to say, and then we'll come back to you, BZ, and give us give us a bit of a rundown on programming. And glad you found the solution. N2EO, K2RIW, in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, N2EO. Talking about energy, I saw on the internet a number of times here in New York State, they said the government will put in free of charge solar panels. Does that mean free, or does it mean a tax credit?
Don, good question. Anybody got an answer to that one?
W2AOC.
AOC, start off with your name and go right ahead.
Name is Tony, actually. I just went through researching that. It's not free of charge. It's interest-free loans up front, so it's you're still paying for it.
Oh, well. What kind... Is there nuclear research going on at Los Alamos at this time, John? And do you have a guess as to when we will have a nuclear fusion energy generation that breaks even? Got any guesses on either one of those? KC2SHO, K2RIW, the second hand.
Yeah, make no mistake, Los Alamos has lots of it has lots of science going on. It is a weapons lab, and obviously nuclear is part of that. Interestingly enough, we don't rely on nuclear energy here to get the energy we need for the lab. That's an interesting thing. I know there's a lot of work in the realm of these sort of small reactors that we can put in places quite simply and power things quite cheaply, they claim. Still wonder about it all, especially after reading the book I mentioned. Need to see a modern response to that book, which I'll probably start researching, looking for somebody who maybe responds to everything that John McPhee says. Your other question, geez, sorry, I missed, I lost something in your question. Can you repeat the part I missed?
I was hoping you had a guess as to when we would have nuclear fusion energy that's viable. Seems like at every point in time, nuclear fusion power generation is always more than 20 years away. Over to you, John.
Yeah, Roger, Dick. Yeah, I did see some news recently where there was some new finding that may lead to potential increase in the use of fusion. You know, the problem is making the reaction work. The things I've read about it, it takes more energy to keep the reaction going than you can create. This, is, I think, has been the paradox with fusion, you know. Creating the things that happen on the sun, I think we don't even fully understand how it happens there. Maybe there's some theories, but we can't recreate that here where you just have a continuous chain reaction of fusion. It works in theory, I think, but they can't do it. Yeah, you know, they can't do it in the lab. I'm sure EC2GS will have a little more to say about it. I'm curious what his thoughts are on it. He's probably much more schooled on this than I am. K2RIW, KC2SHO.
My understanding is that nuclear fusion takes place when you can create a plasma of the raw materials at an extremely high temperature, at an extremely high pressure. With that combination, fusion will take place. The sun is so nice and large, and it's got so darn much gravity and material mass above it, that for the center of the sun to have the pressure, that happens automatically, to have the high temperature, that happens automatically. So nuclear fusion inside of the sun is easy. To duplicate those conditions on the surface of the Earth, extremely difficult. Let's see what Roy should say on any of the above. AC2GS, K2RIW, good, Roy.
When do we know when Roy gets finished?
Okay, I was waiting for that tone. They're working on a break-even experiment. So far, everything that they've thrown at it requires a great deal more power than they get back. And as you mentioned, Dick. It's easy if you have the gravitational the sun to work with. It provides the gravitational pressure and the concomitant temperature to overcome something called proton degeneracy pressure, and allows you to squeeze two protons cleaning up together to start the chain reaction of a fusion reaction. The trick is, if you don't have that temperature and you don't have that pressure and you don't want everything to go boom, how do you exactly do that on Earth? That's where the problem is. Because we can do fusion reactions on Earth. They're called hydrogen bombs. I don't think anyone would want to live close to one, though.
And that hydrogen bomb, which usually I think is triggered by a fission bomb, for a microsecond, you're creating the temperature and the pressure. And so for a few microseconds, you get fusion. But sustained fusion, my goodness, is that tough. It was any... Oh, yeah. Rich wanted to say something on all of the above. N2EO, K2IW, good, Rich.
Yes, Dick, I'd like you to repeat for me what that gentleman said about solar panels. I have a hearing problem. I didn't hear him quite well. Also, as far as fusion, I don't know. But right now, like you said, we can put windmills up. I understand right here on Long Island, there was a proposal to put windmills out off the shore. People rejected it because they said it would be ugly. You know what they call it, NIMBY? Not in my backyard.
Today's Newsday has an article about the fact that the wind-generating systems are going to be put offshore of Long Island. And they're negotiating with companies right now. When it comes to the solar panels on the house being free, that was Tony, ASC. Want to repeat your comment on that one, Tony, ASC? KQIW in the TechNet.
Sure, Dick. It's not that it's free. It's no money out of pocket. The state will give you upfront loan at a low or no interest rate, depending on your income level. So you're not going out of pocket, but you are, in fact, paying for the equipment down the line.
And the solar panels on the roof of a house, there's a certain maintenance charge, installation fee. There are various techniques by which you can rent the system from various companies. Does your roof have a southern-looking exposure that's not being shadowed by trees? There's a whole lot of gating items to make it not quite as desirable sounding as the way it's advertised. I think there are a number of people who have gone for it, and at the end of a couple of years, they were not quite as pleased as they thought they were going to be. But still, solar voltaic. The raw materials are getting cheaper, so it's slowly going to be getting better. I think we've gone through each of the people who are on the list with questions or comments. Let me stand by to make sure we haven't skipped anyone. K2RIW in the TechNet. And I think, Rich, you were going to give us a little bit of a rundown on the Chinese radios. On W2 Bravo Zulu, you want to do that? K2RIW, go ahead, Rich.
Okay, this is about the software. There are two parts to the software. There's the features part, which are all drop-down menus, including what color you want the display to be, and they have four frequencies that you could enter in this optional features part. Let's say your four favorite repeaters. The problem is you can't scan those repeaters, put it in scan mode, you know, to hear if somebody's popping up on one of the repeaters. The other part of the software is a spreadsheet, like a Chirp. I don't know if people are familiar with Chirp. That software, it's a spreadsheet window that comes up. The problem with that, and here's why it's, you know, so not best practices programming. Let me let it drop a second. With that is it always comes up when you bring this window up, spreadsheet-like window where you're going to put all your frequencies in and offsets and everything and power. It comes up with the default frequencies in there that are hard coded into the software, and so you have to then load your file that you save, RAS, and it, in other words, it doesn't come up with your frequencies or your numbers that you put in there. It comes up with some hard coded numbers, so that's a pain in the butt. Also, the cut and paste sometimes works and sometimes doesn't work, which is pretty amazing. And the four frequencies, like I said, four frequencies are not necessary, but there's nothing you can do about them. They're called A, B, C, and D, and they're on the screen all of the time. There's no way to delete those and just put everything into the spreadsheet. Also, it doesn't, if you want to overwrite a file that you're saving, which is, again, I can't think of any piece of software that didn't ask you if you wanted to overwrite, for the last 20 years. And basically, that's about it. You really can't operate this radio without operating the software. The good thing about the software, really only good thing about the software, is that it writes to the radio in like 5 seconds or 10 seconds, and that's pretty amazing to me. So, you have to... work around this stuff if you want the more power. And so for $79, especially KC1FAM Sam has put up with me trying to get a decent signal into Selden for a few months now, and I just solved the whole problem for $79, and now I can hit 10 repeaters. So again, the answer is in, what's my signal? And I believe in these radios. Let's see if they stop, if it continues to work, though. So that's it. I'll report if anything else happens, in the future. Thanks, Dick. W2BZ.
Thank you, Rich. Good information. Certainly sounds like we did our money's worth. Remember the early handy talkies, what they cost? And the early VHF, UHF radios? Wow. Seems like almost everything started off at $300, $400, $500 in the beginning. And here we can get handy talkies for $30-some-odd and base station and mobile rigs for $70-some-odd with medium performance, but you have to put up with this crazy programming problem. Pays you money, it takes your choice. Okay, I think we've gone through the list. I'm going to turn it over to Roy. And are you going to hit us with a puzzle tonight, Roy, or the choice is yours? AC2GS, that's a science talk, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Thank you, Dick. There'll be a puzzle included. Thankfully, I still had a few left behind. But first, I just want to do the usual stuff that if anyone has any comments, suggestions, topics, what have you, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And everything that I talk about will probably have a link on a link page. You just go to roy.ac2gs.com, and I've updated it for 2019, and you don't have to scroll through too much. So just look there for links to articles that I mentioned. Let me drop for a sec. Now, like I said, I like to include the bits of the Internet that have interested me in the past week. And this week we have the Consumer Electronics Show, filled with fascinating and less than fascinating products. And one of the goofiest ones, in my humble opinion, is basically for electrified plank of wood. It looks like a unfinished piece of pine. I guess you're supposed to kind of screw it into the wall. The trick, though, is it's full of electronics, so you have to plug in a power supply somewhere, and the lights are right below the surface of the wood. So it gives you an indication of the time and the weather, and you can talk to your plank of wood and communicate with Google products and such. And it's yet another one of these very curious